practitioners and ministers out there, just stand up with me, holding your hands over your heart and closing your eyes and going within. And how magnificent it is to recognize and remember that there's only one life, and that life is God's life, and that life is our life right here and right now, no matter where you are, and that life is perfect, whole, and complete, and that life is the very essence that makes this service so beautiful in so many ways, that it just lifts our spirits, opens up our heart, filled with laughter and joy, and with new hairdos, for we just love our Reverend Bonnie. And so today, knowing that everything she says just touches our heart and just allows us to feel that connection no matter where we are. And so blessing this service, blessing everything that has made it possible to come together today. I am so grateful that I just released this word into the power of the law. And so it is. And so if you'll join me by continually to keep your eyes closed, let's go down a remembrance lane as you join me in meditation. So, taking in a deep breath, remember what it feels like to really relax. Remember what it feels like to lie in the sun. Remember what it feels like to be loved. Remember doing something special for someone. Remember being happy. Remember how it feels to really laugh. Remember how it feels to have a really good cry. Remember the feeling of a good night's sleep. Remember the excitement of starting something new. Remember the relief of finishing a project. Remember the feeling of holding a puppy. Remember the feeling of a child's hand. Remember being at peace with yourself. And now taking in an even deeper breath, just sense the love and light of God as it goes in and out of each breath you take. And allow yourself to bathe in this energy of love. This love that permeates everything. Notice the sensations within your body temple, the feeling of your skin, the touch of your clothing on your skin. Feel the sensations in your mouth, your tongue resting on your teeth. Notice that any bodily sensation. And just reflect that every sensation is the power and presence that is the creative life force within you. Feel this presence working within you. Listen and hear the sounds around you. Every sound reflects the work of some divine action taking place. now ask yourself, what do I know of God? Begin naming what you know about God. God is love. God is life. God is abundance. God is peace. God is perfect wisdom. And let go now. Let go of saying God is, and contemplate that you are what God is. You are all the magnificent qualities of God. And as you open your heart and mind to remembering this and all good things, just feel that good welling up from within you. Know that this feeling of good has the power to manifest truth and wholeness, peace and well-being, to initiate change and wash away anything that doesn't serve the power of love. Feel this love within you. Feel its wisdom within you. Listen for your intuitive voice. And know that you can follow this wisdom into action always. And now open your eyes and notice that you are seen through the eyes of love, and so it is.
Moving the Rocks by Jack Kornfield. A writer I know began his spiritual practice with a well-known teacher many years ago. The writer didn't know much about meditation, but after some preliminary instruction, he decided that enlightenment was for him. He went off to a hut in the mountains of Vermont and brought his few books on meditation and enough food for 6 months. He figured 6 months would perhaps give him a taste of enlightenment. As he began his retreat, he enjoyed the forest and the solitude, but in just a few days he began to feel crazy, because as he sat all day in meditation, his mind would not stop. Not only did it think, plan, and remember constantly, but worse, it kept singing songs. This man had chosen a beautiful spot for his enlightenment. The hut was right on the edge of a bubbling stream. The sound of the stream seemed nice on the first day, but after a while it changed. Every time he sat down and closed his eyes, he would hear the noise of the stream, and immediately in tune with it, his mind would begin to play marching band songs, like Stars and Stripes Forever and the Star-Spangled Banner. At one point, the sounds of the stream became so insistent, he actually stopped meditating, walked down to the stream and started moving the rocks around to see if he could get it to play a different tune. What we do in our own lives is often not different. When difficulties arise, we project our frustration onto them as if it were the rain, the children, or the world outside that was the source of our discomforts. We imagine that we can change the world and then be happy. But it is not by moving the rocks that we find happiness and awakening, but by transforming our relationship to them.
Thank you, Hugh, from at home, and calling Brother Brock Travis up, who's going to sing I Am Remembering with us. And just remember, as we sing, you know, the higher the hair, the closer we are to God. So there you go. So as we sing together, we also remember that truly our relationship to everything is everything. And that the I Am presence, which is another name for God, for spirit, for love, constantly lives and has its being in each of us. We just remember that now. We remember it for ourselves, but we also remember it for all beings everywhere. Our song ministers to the world, and the world needs our ministry right now. So let us sing together. I am remembering who still in the purity of that remembrance. Let us breathe in deeply. And then exhale, opening our eyes in love and in service to what is, as it is, and so it is. And now we hear from our sister, Reverend Karen Mitchell.
My day, say everything went wrong. No one sings their song my way. Or I can laugh about my day, the good it really brought me, the patience you taught me each step of the way.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to move girlfriend up here because I've changed my hairdo. Today's service is all about the hair, by the way. But anyway, she's going to go back up here and just help me out there. You may have before noticed little Wayne Dyer peeking up over the choir loft. He's a little too big to sit on one of the choir chairs. Who knew? Who knew that about Wayne Dyer? So anyway, we put him down there. He's staring at me, and I'm not liking that, but I'll see if I can manage. Okay, so let us get started with what we're talking about today. Okay, so I wanted to mention a little bit about last week. I'm going to move this over. Thank you. Okay, I wanted to talk a little bit about last week. We spoke about how there seems to be a shift going on in terms of the pandemic, and you know, things are starting to open up slowly, and there's some hope that soon, someday soon, we'll get back to normal. And normal implies the status quo. Well, last week we spoke about that maybe we should release the need for the status quo and be the place where 10,000 flowers grow. And of course, being, you know, in religious science, we blow everything up until it's huge. So I've changed that to 10 million flowers now, because there are 10 million blossoms waiting to happen here in this crazy, beautiful world. So be the place where 10 million flowers grow. And I think that one of the ways that we allow those 10 million flowers to grow is by letting our greatness show. And so today is a talk about greatness. Whether you think you have greatness, or whether you think you have no greatness whatsoever, whether you think the world is great or not great, I'm going to speak with you today about letting our greatness show. Because I think that is what moves us away from the status quo and into that place where 10 million flowers grow. So, the truth about greatness, it's a word that's often inflated, you know, that you can only be great if you've won some accolade, like the Nobel Peace Prize or a Tony Award, or you're top of your class at some prestigious school. But really, greatness is everywhere. I think a lot of people have learned from this pandemic that in the past, we walked sightless among miracles, because so many of us are appreciating things that we once had, or things that we're reconnecting with because of being quarantined. So we walked sightless among miracles, but we also, I think, walked sightless among greatness. Greatness is omnipresent. It is always there. Now, sometimes greatness is covered up by, say, clouds. If greatness is the sun and there are clouds in front of the sun, we can't see the sun, but the sun is still shining. It's the same thing with greatness. Greatness is sometimes covered up by something like a cloud, and that cloud is our cloudy perception. Greatness does not come into our lives, or we don't appreciate greatness unbidden. We have to allow our perception to shift so that we may witness greatness and experience it, and also share greatness. I was thinking a lot about the idea that greatness is a choice. Many of us in this church are familiar with the song "Love Is My Decision" by Daniel Nemad, and I would say that greatness is also our decision as well. We can choose greatness. Reminds me of Albert Einstein, who said that we have to decide whether or not the universe is a friendly place or an unfriendly place. And others, teachers such as Gary Simmons from Unity, who says that we have to decide whether or not the world is for us or against us. We also have to decide whether the world is great or not great. And really, you know, if you attend this church on a regular basis, when I ask questions like, is the world great or not great? The answer to all of those questions is what? Yes, yes, because it is both at the same time. That's one of the strange paradoxes of spiritual life, is that it's both at the same time. You know, I meant to bring in a Mobius strip today, but the concept of Mobiosity is really, really grabbing my heart right now in this pandemic, where it's something that's really bad that's going on that is bringing out so much good. You know, a Mobius strip is this thing like an infinity symbol. It's a circle, but if you twist it a little bit, if you twist it and then join the ends, there's no inside and there's no outside. The inside and the outside are intertwined and one. And that's how I feel about all of these opposites, that they really are intertwined and one. Now, I don't know if that means anything to you, but I think that it's important for us to know that greatness and not greatness are intertwined, and the only thing that stands in the way of us manifesting and expressing and experiencing greatness is our perception and our choice. You know, another way of saying that the universe is either friendly or unfriendly, or great or not great, or for or against, is that we can ask ourselves, is life a comedy or a tragedy? Charlie Chaplin and others said that comedy is tragedy plus time. And I think that we've probably experienced that in our lives. I have a very vivid recollection of that. Have you ever told a joke that's like too soon, right? Yeah, I made up a song about the Thomas fire that was too soon. Also, I remember one time in church I told a Jesus joke. I asked the congregation if they could tell me what Jesus' favorite cocktail was, and the answer was a rusty nail, which I thought was funny, but one of our practitioners came up to me afterwards and he goes, "Bonnie, too soon." I'm like, it's been 2,000 years, please. But yeah, that concept of too soon is real, because in order for tragedy to turn into something comedic, when we get past it and when we can look back on it, we can often find the humor in it. You know, it also reminds me of things like weddings. I've done a lot of weddings, not a lot recently because a lot of people are canceling their weddings, but I've done a lot of weddings, and there's often all this drama and all this trauma, and all of those things turn into funny stories eventually. So, comedy is tragedy plus time, but I also think that comedy is tragedy plus distance. I'm wondering how many of us have increased our television viewing in this time of pandemic. I see some very innocent faces looking in here in the seven or so of us that are assembled here. If you're at home and you've increased your television viewing, let's do a little show of pinkies, right? Now, if you're new to this church, if you're new to this center, first of all, my hair doesn't always look like that. And the second thing is that when we talk about something that we're excited about sharing, we do a show of thumbs. We're not so excited, maybe we're a little embarrassed by it, we do a show of pinkies, okay? So I'm showing my pinky for the amount of television I've been watching. You know, when you think about TV shows, do you want to watch a drama or a comedy? And right now, even despite the fact that the world is pretty crazy, I really like watching dramas. And I think a lot of others do too. One of the most popular shows ever is Grey's Anatomy. I think Ellen Pompeo, who plays the lead in that, is perhaps the highest paid actress, or at least one time she was, on television. And, you know, you look at that show and you imagine, if I was in that show, if I was in it, I would not want to be any of those people. It would be tragic. It would be tragic. I don't remember exactly what happens. I know, you know, a lot of people die. There's a whole lot of booty call going on and there's all kinds of surgery and whatnot. But, you know, let's just pretend like Meredith, who's a surgeon, takes out the wrong organ, right? And that would be tragic. That would be tragic. That hardly ever happens, okay? But when you're watching it from a distance, it's entertaining. Is that sick? Perhaps a little bit, but it's that distance that gives us the entertainment value. And I sometimes wonder if that's, you know, I've heard people say that the planet Earth is a reality show for God. Maybe the planet Earth is a drama for God or for the universe or for love. And I think the reason that we watch things like Grey's Anatomy or other shows that are dramas, we watch Meredith suffer because she took out the wrong organ. She took out the pancreas instead of the liver. I think we watch that because we want to see people transform and transcend and overcome and express their greatness in spite of what happens and in spite also of what they do. And I think the lesson for that, for us in that, is to know that if whatever is happening, if we can hold that with a certain amount of greatness, if we can hold that with a certain amount of grace, which is very close to greatness, if we can hold it from a place that is not even holding it, from a place that is spacious and timeless, we hold what is happening in spaciousness and timelessness, because that is the truth of what is happening, by the way, then we become that place of awareness that is completely aware, that is aware that we are aware, that is aware yet untarnished by what is going on. And that is living from the truth of our being. That is living from our greatness. That's why I said before that everybody has greatness, but it simply needs to be revealed. Ernest Holmes said, "There is nothing to be healed, only wholeness to be revealed." And he might as well have said, "There is no greatness to be healed. We don't have to add any more greatness to our stature. There is only greatness to be revealed." So the willingness to look at things aright, to look at things from that place of timelessness and spaciousness, to step back and breathe and allow the vision of spirit or the vision of love to help you, to help us look at things, that helps greatness emerge for all of us. Now, what about our personal greatness? There is a dark side to New Thought religions. I see people nodding. And I'm familiar if your dark side is the same as my dark side, but we'll talk about it after class, okay? Oh, yeah, Jennifer's is. I saw, what did you do? You just whipped yourself? Yeah. Yeah. So the dark side of, she didn't literally whip herself, by the way. She just mimed it. But the dark side of New Thought teachings is that because we believe that we create everything that happens to us, and I don't necessarily say it that way. I say the quality of our thought affects the quality of our existence or the quality of our experience, because there are bigger forces at play. We don't create everything that happens to us. Let's just leave it at that. But because there is that consciousness of feeling that if this thing is happening, it must be my fault, then that can tend to diminish our greatness. You know, I've talked before when this pandemic first started about some of the reasons that I've read on the wisdom of the internet about why the pandemic is happening. You know, beer was one of them. I don't know that Corona beer is doing so well right now, but beer was one of them. And one of the Kardashians said that God caused it. And I'm sure there are other people that are saying that the sinners are causing it. You know, and that's just, it's so arbitrary. It's so made up. I was saying to somebody the other day, you know, I think Pluto caused it, the planet Pluto, because Pluto is pissed off that it doesn't get to be a planet anymore. And so it's saying, you know, I'll show you what something small can do. Yeah, take this virus. Okay. Anyway, getting carried away. So we don't know what caused it. And because it is so much easier for us to make something up than rather be in uncertainty, we make up reasons why we cause the bad things that happen to us. And what if we don't? What if we don't? This line of thought reminded me of something that happened in my household recently. Many of you know that I have these two Vizslas. They're Hungarian pointers, and they're very, very active dogs. They need to run a lot. They need to hike a lot. And my girl dog, Sarah, especially, is very wild. And she'll plunge into bushes to chase quail, and she'll leap off of cliffs. About a month ago, she hurt her neck because she leapt off of a cliff. And then the other day, 2 days ago, I went on a hike, and I came back, and her eye was all puffy. The vet knows me by now. I call up the vet office and I say, my dog Sarah has a problem. And the person answering the phone says, well, I'll see if Dr. Fowle can take her, you know, I don't know. And the vet will go up to Dr. Fowle and say, there's this Vizsla named Sarah. And the Dr. Fowle just goes, just bring her in. She's, you know, we're going to put a plaque in the vet's office for Sarah's name because she's there a lot. And so she had a corneal abrasion or a corneal ulcer from sticking her head into a bush trying to get birds or squirrels or bunnies or whatever she was chasing. And she poked her eye, and now we have to give her eye drops. Has anybody here ever had an animal that does not want to do something that you want to do to them, and you know that it's good for them to do it? I see Doreen raising her hand. I see Lonnie over there raising her hand. I see Brock raising his hand. Norm? Norm too. Kenny, Chris, well, okay. That's all who's here today. So anyway, you know, I've heard stories about like even clipping a toenail. Lonnie tells me about clipping her cat's toenails. She has to do it stealth toenail clipping. She has to only do like one or two at a time and sneak up on her. And the same thing was true with Sarah. We'd sidle up to her. I'd sidle up to her with the eye drops, grab her head and try and get the eye drops in there. Not so much. She got wise to me. So then we had to bring out the big guns. We had to bring out Hugh so Hugh could hold her down and I could pry her eye open. It's amazing how strong their eye muscles are. Pry her eye open and stick the eye drops in there. You know, and from her perspective, there is something that is very much against her. Mommy and Daddy and these nasty drops are against her. The veterinarian is against her. But really, we are for her. We're trying to help her. And again, to speak metaphorically, I wonder if that is the case with a lot of things that happen in our lives, that the universe is for us, that God is for us, and maybe God is prying our eyes open and putting drops in them. Sometimes the drops look like tears, so that we may see clearly again. We see the nature of life as it truly is. We see the nature of our being as it truly is, which is great, expansive, magnificent, wondrous, but not as the world knows those qualities, as spirit knows those qualities. I'm going to read you a quote along those lines from a book that I've been reading. The book is called Wild Mercy, and it's by Mirabai Starr, and it's a lovely book about female mystics, about non-duality. I'm going to read you a quote that addresses what I just said. So, where is it? Okay. This is from Mirabai Starr. It's actually two quotes that are combined. Mystics seem to have no shame about contradicting themselves. They blithely proclaim that the cure for pain is in the pain itself, and that the cry of longing is the sigh of merging. That's because the path of the mystics reconciles contradictory propositions such as harrowing sorrow and radical amazement. And the mystic blesses us with an expanded capacity to sit with ambiguity, to treasure vulnerability, to celebrate paradox as the highest truth. And then, much of our messaging pathologizes drama, death, and loss. Many of us mistake the fire of grief or longing or loss as problems to be resolved rather than as evidence of our holy membership in the human condition and an invitation to spiritual transformation. By transformation, I do not mean transcendence. I mean the opposite of rising above the realities of this world. Rather, it is about becoming so fully present that the line between the sacred and the ordinary is obliterated, and the face of the beloved shines from every face, human, bees, and juniper trees. Not to mention all of us. The face of the beloved shines from all of us. So I hope that I've convinced you, all of us, that we're great, that we have greatness that is either being expressed or the capacity for greatness that is latent, but all we need to do is acknowledge our greatness and let it out. Now, how does one do that? I think it all happens in the heart and the mind and the belief. Thought plus feeling equals belief, and it is done unto us as we believe. We experience as we believe. So one of the things that's been helpful for me in terms of dealing with the pandemic and the quarantine and all of the changes that this has brought about is to recognize that constraint is actually creativity in disguise. I'm assuming that many of us have felt constrained about not being able to get things that we want, or not being able to do what we want, or not being able to be with loved ones, or not being able to even go to a restaurant. And what if that is a great opportunity for greater creativity, for greatness to emerge in new and surprising ways? As you know, I'm connected with this international service organization called Service Space, and one of their responses to the pandemic was to start a website to counteract all of the fear and all of the negativity about the pandemic, and also to help us recognize the amount of greatness that is emerging not only in spite of this situation, but because of it. The website, I'll put it on the Facebook page or on our webpage, it's Karuna, which is compassion in Sanskrit, karunavirus.org. And it lists all kinds of compassionate acts that are happening all over the world. There is a high school senior, I believe, that is using a 3D printer to create personal protective equipment, masks and gowns and gloves. How did he think that up? There's another high school student that has a friend that is hearing impaired who reads lips. And when everybody is wearing a mask, this person can't communicate. And so he created a mask that has a window in it. A window of it's material, but it's clear material, so that this person can read lips now. There is a Sikh community in Southern California that is expending huge amounts of effort and resources to ensure that healthcare workers and childcare people are being fed. There are so many stories like that, over 519 stories. That was the last count, and I'm sure that there are more by now. Another story that just came to my mind was this family in Poland that, you know, we're all limited about what we can do, so they go for walks, and they transcend their limitations by one time that they recognized that the gravestones in the cemetery that they walk through were dirty. And so they clean off people's gravestones just a little bit at a time to honor those that have passed away perhaps hundreds of years ago. So you see what can be done. So much magic, so much grace, so much goodness, so much greatness just awaits for us to receive it, to open our hearts to it, and to know that it is the true nature of our being. You know, I brought up the Karuna site because they have a lot of exciting stories from around the globe, and I like to think that this center has a global impact because we impact them and they impact us, and pretty soon we don't know who the giver or the receiver is. That's another Mobius strip happening there, giving and receiving. But really here in this center, there are so many activities of greatness going on all the time. I asked on the Facebook page, what's one tiny act of greatness that you can do today, something that brings more joy or love or peace or happiness into the world? Now, I did not get very many responses to that. Usually I get like 50. This time I got like 5. And I don't know whether people are tired of it or they didn't understand the question or maybe it felt braggy to say, well, I'm great. I'm going to do this thing today. My greatness was I was going to make my hair into a haystack and dress up like my little alter ego there. Now, you may not think that's great, but it brought a lot of smiles to the people around me. And my husband, who watched me navigate the whole thing. But anyway, I'm going to read the response, the few responses that we got from Facebook. Nancy is going to relax. That's her greatness for today, bringing more beauty, joy, or love to herself or another. She's going to sit in her recliner and binge on Barbara Streisand albums. Jill built a love path in her garden. Vicky is going to rinse and wash another's dishes. That is very service space. Service space people wash dishes all the time. That is what they do. Gia, our singer from last week, is posting flowers on Facebook and reaching out to people who are living alone. Jackie is leaving anonymous flowers at a neighbor's door. She's going to a farmer's market. She's going to pick up an extra bouquet and leave it at her neighbor's door. And Lynn Barnes is watching a dog's journey. I guess, is that a movie? I don't know that story. A dog's journey for the fourth or fifth time to enhance her comfort. You know, and the thing is, too, like I said before, that we have walked sightless among miracles, sorry, Jen, that we've walked sightless among miracles, and that, you know, I look back on this center, and I look back at how many people, I would say everybody here, really, I can't name everybody, but how many people have influenced and touched my life with their greatness so that I can spread greatness to others. I'm just going to give you 3 examples, because I like the number 3, and I can't name everybody. But one of them is our friend and practitioner, Bernie Austin. Bernie, for years, has been a great teacher of mine. One of the things that she does that you may recognize if you're on Facebook is that she posts a daily appreciation. And what happens when she posts that appreciation is that it opens my eyes and say, wow, yeah, I appreciate that too. I appreciate the cracks in the sidewalk where little tiny pieces of grass that are so tenacious are poking their little heads up. You know, that's a metaphor for me. I really appreciate that, Bernie. Another thing that Bernie does is, I don't know if she still does this, but I remember her saying in class one time that when she's stuck in a difficult situation, she says to herself, well, what's good about this is, and then fills in the blank. Because there's always a flip side to everything, and Bernie really has modeled that for me. Another person who has inspired me, and this was years ago, this was probably at least 10 years ago, but when I came on board here as the minister 16 years ago, that's a long time, 16 years ago, we had to restructure a lot of different things, and our treasurer at the time was a gentleman named Russell, and Russell had this thought about that we should put away a significant stash of reserve money. And he said, you know, in case we have a disaster or something, we should have that money. And at the time, I was like, there's not going to be a disaster. What are you talking about? Lo and behold, here we are, and we have reserves because of Russell. So Russell's greatness shone through in that moment, his persistence in wanting us to do that, and it touched me deeply that he wanted to do it. And well, we all went along with it because you know, it seemed like a good idea, but part of me was saying it's not going to happen. But I'm so glad that we went along with it. So that was Russell's greatness expressing. And then the third one is something that I learned from Judy Pando, Reverend Judy Pando. And I remember sitting in class with her one time years ago. We were teaching Practitioner 2 training, and I think we were talking about some calamity, something bad that happened, and she quoted a Mr. Rogers quote that I'm fond of saying, which is, focus on the helpers. Focus on the helpers. And you may note that Fred Rogers is up there in the back row with a red sweater, because he's one of my spiritual teachers. But I remember that quote, and I used it in sermons quite a bit. And I don't know where Judy heard it, but she shared it with me, and then I used it in sermons quite a bit. And then recently, Lonnie told me that the woman who cuts both of our hair, and I do hope that our hairdresser was watching today to see my do, you know, my do that looked like that before I fixed it, that she had this desire to help some of the people who pick our crops that weren't getting enough food. And it was a bit of an arduous process to get it all together, but she said that she kept hearing my voice saying, focus on the helpers, focus on the helpers, focus on the helpers. And she did it. But the thing is, the only thing wrong with that story is that it wasn't my voice. It was Judy Pando's voice. And even more than that, it was perhaps the voice of this community where we are training one another to focus on the helpers, to be the greatness that we came here to be. I hope with those examples that I shared that you understand that to be great doesn't mean that you need to go out and do something that's going to get you a Nobel Peace Prize. It means doing tiny acts of value in the world. Tiny acts will get the job done because tiny acts are doable, and they also, they bunch together and create big acts. All of those things that I talked about, the masks and the feeding the people that pick our food and printer, the 3D printer, all of that was the result of many, many tiny acts of goodness. So anything that we can do, this is my homework assignment for all of you, and you don't have to write it on Facebook if you don't want to, but if you'd like to, I'd love to hear about it. My homework assignment for you is to just one time a day really get in touch with the sense of greatness and say, what tiny act does greatness want me to do today? What tiny act will add value to the world? What tiny act will bring love, truth, joy, peace, happiness to myself or another? Dr. Martin Luther King, paraphrasing him, said that to serve is to be great, and because anyone can serve, anyone can be great. And I believe that with all my heart. I believe that you are great, that we are great, that this community is great, and that we will triumph in greatness during this time of pandemic, no matter what happens. I am so sure of that, than I've been of almost anything in my whole life. And so I hope that you join with me in that surety, but also do the work of those tiny, tiny acts of value and greatness in the world. Recognize your greatness, recognize the greatness of others, and recognize who you truly are at your core, which is great. Let's pray now, and so it is.